And Go for Gridiron Radio is brought to you by the Goal Line Club. Again, Ryan, the Goal Line Club exists to support Gopher football. So if you want to find a way to support Gopher football, become a member today. It's $100. It's completely tax-free. Become a member, join the events, join the tailgates, etc. Maybe meet up with us and say hi when you're getting a drink at the tailgate.
Well, that's where we had a couple people come up to us at the tailgate and be like, oh, you know, you actually hear sometimes like you'll be there. And yet you are. And I'm like, yep, I'm sitting here having a rum and diet. So if you want to come have a couple of adult beverages with me and talk shop, come see us at the Illinois tailgate coming up in a couple of weeks.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back as the Gophers shell shock Maryland. Did you like that dad joke to open?
That was too easy.
Well, what I wanted to say was the Gophers trampled the Turtles or the Terrapins of Maryland, but I didn't know that anybody would get the trampled by Turtles reference.
I got it. It's
anyways,
great.
The Gophers win 34-16. Absolutely dominating performance from the Minnesota Moving Company up front and on the defensive line. There's a lot to get into as your Gophers have now won three straight Big Ten games and technically sit atop the Big Ten West at 3-1. But joining me and Luke, as always, is my second cousin and Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, those are the types of games on Saturday where you get to watch the big boys up front plus Ko Keefe and that tight end room, and you're like, they know it's coming. They still can't stop it. And you love moving another man against his will.
Yeah, it was. Thanks for having me back, guys. I appreciate it. It was a fun one to watch as a fan of offensive line and running the football. And I can also tell you that those offensive linemen are very sore and very tired. Not that you wouldn't be after any game, but especially after that game on Saturday. A lot of those long drives with consecutive runs will wear you down. So credit to those guys. We'll get into it. Thanks a lot.
All right. So a couple quick facts I just want to throw at you guys. Today is October 24th. Do you know why that is significant?
It's almost the rut, and I'm hopefully going to be able to kill a deer this week.
Close. Actually, October 24th was the Gophers' opening game last year in 2020 against Michigan when they hosted game day and lost to Jim Harbaugh in the khaki pants. But what a difference a year makes, huh? We are now currently, through seven games? And we would just be kicking off last year. Just wild how things have changed. To me, that's just absolutely crazy thinking back and looking back that was the situation. And then the only other thing that I do want to mention, it equals the number of conference wins that Minnesota had in 2020 now that they have three conference wins, and we're only through four conference games. So obviously the Gophers are off to a pretty good start in conference play, and trending obviously in the right direction. Again, Derek, as you always say, you make your hay in November, but obviously trending in the right direction. So I wanted to get those out there because I thought it was very interesting that how different 2020 and 2021 are, obviously fans notwithstanding, but so let's get into the Gophers offense. On the day, the Gophers score 34 points, 451 total yards, 125 through the air, 326 on the ground for a 5.8 yard average, 56 carries. I think, Ryan, you mentioned in the pre-production meeting they had 23 carries to end the game, and then they had 26 first downs and 37 minutes and 35 seconds in time of possession. Whoa. So, Derek, just to open, holy cats, great offensive efficiency in terms of running the football. I do want to mention one more time, the Gophers now have five running backs in 2021 that have eclipsed the 100-yard mark in a game, which to me is staggering given the injuries and everything. And that mostly to me is a credit to the offensive line and that tight end group, including Ko Keefe and Brevin Spanford. So, Derek, just curious, as an offensive lineman, would you take pride in the fact that you had five running backs run behind you that eclipsed 100 yards in a game?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, those guys have really clicked, I think, in the last couple of games in particular. You know, specifically in the game on Saturday, it was a complete mismatch for the Maryland front seven. You know, getting a look at the 3-4 defense that they like to bring. They tried to bring up the outside linebackers, basically play them as stand-up wide nine technique to try to funnel things back to the safeties and the run support, as opposed to just loading the box. And boy, that strategy did not work out for them. I mean, Minnesota was again a mismatch up front, and was able to lean on that front seven of Maryland. And just as the game wore on, you know, wore down the front seven and bigger holes in the second half. So a lot of love to go around for the offensive line. I would say the group as a whole, every down to each and every guy, played well. But in particular, you know, we have to go the broken record route and mention Cole Keefe again. Maybe his best game of the year among a several good games. You know, he is one of the best blocking tight ends Minnesota's ever had, but maybe the best in space. Blocking guys and really that more of an H-back, you know, pulling and folding and blocking a linebacker or a defensive end in space. I don't know that we've seen somebody do it as well as he has. And beyond Coe, I would also just highlight John Michael Schmitz. When you play a 3-4 team, you have to block guys in space, and you have to block well at the second level. That's his forte. So John Michael Schmitz, an excellent game. And then also Connor Olson, I would say, too, had a very good game. But overall, that the last couple of games, I think we've seen this group really click. There were high expectations coming in to the year, and I think they've kind of reached that level now. So look for them to maintain it against better competition going forward.
I mean, the whole Minnesota moving company, like Derek just said, just it's the third straight year they've done it against Maryland. I mean, in 2019, I think they rushed for over 250 yards with their backs. In 2020, when they blew that 3-score lead, still put up 44 points. They put up 250 plus yards with their running backs. And then yesterday, on 49 running back carries, they ran for 292 yards, including 23 straight attempts to end the game. Those 23 attempts went for 132 yards. That's over 5.7 yards per carry. Maryland knew it was coming, and they still couldn't stop it. And that's my favorite part about this whole deal, is they knew it was coming. Minnesota made no bones about it, and they still were able to move the ball consistently. And that's where you're, I mean, the stats now are what they are, where, you know, a couple of good ones that were passed along to me by the SID at Minnesota were, Minnesota now has five different running backs with touchdowns, and that's the first time that's happened since 1985. Minnesota's also got five different 100-yard running backs on the year. They went all the way back to 1942 when they started keeping stats like that. They can't find another year where this has happened. So I know Luke has brought up in recent weeks how, you know, I thought the running back room was deep, and I still do. And you're starting to see that depth. You're starting to see the heir to the pair and the spare. But I never in my wildest dreams thought you would be seeing five different running backs have as much success as they had. And that's where it's fun, man. I mean, that's why I thought Minnesota was going to win the game, was they've won in the trenches historically. They did it on the defensive side of the ball as well, and we'll get to that in a bit. But I want to echo two guys again specifically. Coe Keefe, again, I think he's going to go down as one of the best blocking tight ends in Minnesota football history. And that's a long, long history, and I understand that. But what he does is so critical to springing these runs for this offense. And he's willing to do it 30 to 40 times a game, where he is just absolutely laying everything out on the line. And he is playing at such a high level right now. They even rewarded him, Luke, with a little crossing route or a little deep over, where Coe Keefe, thank God for his mother and that athleticism that she possesses. He's able to get the catch and get his feet down, but they even reward him there. And then John Michael Schmitz, if it wasn't for Tyler Linderbaum, I'm telling you right now, John Michael Schmitz should be talked about for first team All Big Ten. Now, Tyler is, I mean, he is incredible. And I think John Michael, I don't know if he's quite at that level, but he is playing the best I've seen a Gopher center play in a long time. I mean, he was so vital to so many different blocks yesterday that, again, even just across line, even Axel Rushmeyer continues to play well as that utility offensive lineman for the six alignment package. I think he's such a much better fit for Minnesota than Curtis Dunlap was there. But it's just, Luke, these are the types of games where, I mean, in theory, it should be a Wisconsin Army type of game where you should be getting done a little bit early with the amount of rush attempts that we saw yesterday. But it's a lot of fun. And you even got to see a couple of those young running backs, Luke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on the day, Kai Thomas, 21 carries, leads the team for 139 yards, along a 38 with a touchdown. Marquise Irving, 15 for 105, a 7-yard average, also caught a pass for 28 yards on the day. Bryce Williams, 13 carries, 48 yards. And then Cole Kramer, 5 carries and 30 yards. All in all, like, the running game was fantastic. I don't know if you guys want to touch on anything else in the running game. But I do want to talk some of the passing game too. Any other topics in the running game you guys want to hit on quick?
Go for it. Yeah, just one more thing that I think is maybe a little bit overlooked is this game in particular, good blocking out of the wide receivers, blocking back on the secondary. I don't want to drone on too long about X's and O's here, but again, with a 3-4 team, Maryland electing to go a lot of man-to-man coverage, particularly in the first half, what they needed to do was get the safeties and the corners involved in run support. So they did end up dialing up a lot of safety and corner crashes. And Minnesota countered that by having their wide receivers either crack block or block inside against the secondary. So some of those bigger, especially the ones that bounced outside for bigger gains, several of those you saw on the day, were the result of the wide receivers getting good blocks on the secondary downfield. So wanted to make sure that was mentioned.
I also just want to touch on Kai and Bucky. First time either one of those freshman running backs have gone over 100 yards. I mean, there's a reason we've talked about for weeks now. There were 4-star talents coming out. I mean, there's a reason Kai Thomas just eviscerated everybody in Topeka during high school. You saw Bucky's ability. And, you know, I like that the three backs that Minnesota's rotating are different flavors of each other, or just different flavors of running backs, where Kai Thomas is more of that punishing bruiser type of back where he can make you miss in a phone booth, but he's also very tough to bring down. I think he's the toughest to bring down the three of them. And I also think there's something to be said for the kid's always falling forward, which as a freshman running back, that's exactly what you want to see. A bigger guy like Kai is compared to the others in that room. He gets hit, say, 2 yards past the line, but then he's fallen 5-6 yards. I mean, some backs, you get hit at that 2-yard mark and you're stopped there. And there's such a big difference between 2nd and 8 and 2nd and 4 and 2nd and 5. And then you're able to see the Rodney. I mean, I'm getting a lot of Rodney Smith vibes from Marquise Irving. Now, I think he might be a little faster than what Rodney was, and he's still working on the vision that made Rodney so good. But you see him always trying to bounce it out in the space. You saw him get a couple of guys with a stiff arm, including one that drew a penalty, which I'm 100% okay with. But I mean, I think that the mixture that they're working with, I think Kenny Burns, the running back coach, has done such a good job with kind of rotating those guys in and getting them into plays where their skill sets are going to show. Now, I also want to say, and this can kind of lead into the passing game discussion, Luke, two things. Number one, I continue to be impressed with Mike Sanford for the second straight week. Before, again, Fleck got his hands all over this thing. The end of the first half thing is totally 100% Fleck, and we'll get into that a little later. But the run-pass mixture in that first half was just, I mean, chef's kiss. It was like 55-45 run-pass, exactly where you want to be. Minnesota didn't have issues running the ball or even coming out to start the second half before Fleck totally shut this thing down to 23 straight runs. I mean, everyone in the stadium knew they needed points on that opening drive to start the third quarter. Luke, I talked about in the preview episode how the third quarter, Minnesota's offense hadn't been very good all year. And they get two huge touchdowns on two drives to start the third quarter. You know, credit to Mike Sanford there. And I just think the other thing that leads into this passing game thing, and I mentioned it a little bit, is if you watch this game, Minnesota yesterday was constantly in like 2nd and 3, 2nd and 4, 2nd and 2. They did such a good job on first down that you made the play call list for Mike Sanford exponentially bigger. When you're 2nd and 3 versus 2nd and 8 consistently, you have a lot more options at your disposal. And I think that's an under-talked about thing from yesterday was how good Minnesota was on first down. It really expanded things for Mike Sanford, Luke.
Yeah, so in the passing game, on the day, Tanner Morgan, 8 of 12 for 125 yards. That the thing people will look at and they go, well, they only threw 12 times. And it's like, yeah, I get maybe some frustration. You want to see more balance, but they were being very successful in the run. The thing that pops out to me is that's a 10.4 yard average in completion. Like that's really good. That is not standard in college football. And so kudos to Tanner there. I the other thing I just want to highlight.
And that's with two key Michael Brown Stevens drops on third down.
And Daylon Wright had a block or had a drop too.
Yeah. I mean, Tanner's two throws to Daylon weren't great. And I'd still make the argument, but if the ball hits you in both your hands, you should catch it.
Exactly.
Especially if you're a high level Division I athlete. But like if Michael Brown Stevens catches the second, third down pass where he's wide open in the flat, and I bet you it's if he catches that and just turns his head, that's a race to the pylon and I think he'd win. But again, they didn't have to air it out. Like, did they set the entire game of football back by 40 years yesterday because of how many times they ran the ball? Maybe, but no, you can keep going.
No, I was just going to say, the only thing I want to touch on anymore in the passing game is the fact that, you know, maybe they didn't complete a lot of passes, only 8 on the day, but the reality is that they had 3 of those be very explosive plays with 35 yards from Mike Brown Stevens. Marquise Irving had the 28 yarder and Cole Keefe had the 21 yarder. Like you need to couple like running the ball a ton with, you know, some explosive plays or drawing PIs or whatever and taking some shots. And they were willing to execute or willing to do that and were able to execute on some of those as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Michael Brown Stevens third down, his only one that he did go on. I don't know if it was a third down, but the only catch he had on the day. I love the play design where Michael Brown Stevens comes dragging across the middle. Linebacker gets caught looking one way. He gets it and is able to get 35 yards to put Minnesota in the red zone. Again, we talked about the Cole Keith little dancer feet on the sidelines there. Chris Ottman-Bell had a couple contested catches. But again, I think the reality is, you know, Morgan wasn't really helped out a ton by Brown Stevens on those two third down drops. He really didn't help out his receiver there and Daylon Wright twice, but we'd be talking about 10 of 12 for like 160 yards and a touchdown if Michael Brown Stevens catches his two third downs. And I don't know. I think that they'll have to obviously open it up a little bit more. I don't think they will next week considering what Michigan's running offense just did to Northwestern, but against Iowa and Wisconsin, we'll obviously have to see this passing game open up a little bit. Derek, what were your takeaways from the passing game yesterday?
Well, I think, you know, initially I will just echo your sentiments about the play calling in the first half in particular before the game script got upside down on Maryland. It was really nice to see Minnesota still being aggressive on first down. You know, they get the turnover early. They go for the throat, throwing into single coverage downfield, and they draw pass interference. So it's good to see them attack in that way. The other thing I would say about the passing offense that I think is good to put on film is they're starting to add some layers in that, you know, they're mixing in Bucko on and, you know, the running backs on some of these patterns in the flat. They also, as you mentioned, threw to Cole Keefe. Interesting to see that Maryland didn't even cover him on that play. So if that tells you, you know, having scouted the Gophers, they probably thought, well, they're just never going to throw to him. So they didn't bother covering him. But to his credit, he comes down with the catch and a good key play there. But it's good to see them adding the layers. And it would be nice to see them continue putting those in, because as you put more things on tape and teams have to prepare for you in those November games that we keep referencing, you don't want to be one-dimensional and you don't want to be simple, because, you know, it puts less for the defense to prepare for. So, you know, maybe not this year, but maybe, you know, moving on to next year, I could see them using, in particular, Bucko Irving, using him in the slot in a jet sweep situation, getting him in space. I mean, that's where he's going to be the best. I know now they do have a couple of routes for him out in the flat, and it's just one more thing for the defense to defend. So finding creative ways to get him in space, I think, is going to be advantageous. And, you know, in addition to what we've seen in the passing game, it's nice to see them add layers of complexity.
All right, let's talk about something we have to talk about, which was the end of the first half, the 11-play, 55-yard drive that concluded in what should have been a touchdown for Maryland on a block field goal, but the Gophers were fortunate enough that they couldn't recover it cleanly. And this is kind of a, this is a trend that we've seen in late game situations, late half situations, I should say, where the Gophers either become a little too risk averse and or are willing to just settle for a field goal. And in this particular situation, they did what they did was they settled. And ultimately, you know, bad special teams turns into a potential scoring opportunity for Maryland they weren't able to capitalize on. So what I want to get into first is why are they getting so conservative, Ryan? I know to me this is all PJ Fleck, and but why? Like, why not try and go for the touchdown in this situation? Why basically with a minute and 9 seconds left say, okay, we're just gonna kill the clock here, and eventually just clock it and kick the, like, I don't know, 35-yard field goal maybe? Just frustrating.
I mean, why? I mean,
I know why, but
I think everyone here knows why. It's PJ Fleck, and he's the most risk-averse person. I have never met a person as outgoing as PJ Fleck where they get into their work duties and they're the most risk-averse person on the flip side. They are complete polar opposites. And is it incredibly frustrating? No doubt, because you got a fourth-year starting quarterback. You have Chris Ottman-Bell, who I feel like hasn't lost a contested catch situation all year. So you got 32 seconds left. You just burned your final timeout. You're at like the Maryland 16, and you decide to call zone left and then not even take a shot. And again, I had people complaining about Sanford. It ain't Sanford. It's all PJ. But is it frustrating? Absolutely. Can you get away with it against a team like Maryland? Yeah, and you did. But the only reason this isn't a bigger talked about thing is because Minnesota comes out, starts the second half, puts 14 up. The defense does what they do. Minnesota wins by 3 touchdowns. I think the discussion point here is you can't pull that stuff against Iowa and Wisconsin and expect to win. You can't play scared.
So here
you got to play to win the game, you know? And yeah, that's where you'd want to see them start to do that in the next 2 weeks if that kind of situation comes up again. Because you want to be able to prepare your players where if you're in Iowa City and it's in the fourth quarter and you got a situation like that where you need to, it's a pressure spot, you need points. Well, they need to have something to fall back on, especially as 18 to 22 year old individuals. So I'd love to see in Evanston this upcoming week or against the Fighting Brett Bielema's in 2 weeks, that if Fleck gets put in that spot again, you're probably going to be able to get away with it if you do become aggressive in that instance, because you're not facing a couple of elite type of teams here in the West. But Derek, where do you think where do your thoughts lie here?
Well, I thought I don't have any way of proving this, but what was interesting is the previous offensive possession for Maryland, I believe that even they started running the ball to take more time off the clock so that Minnesota didn't, you know, to get into halftime basically. And again, I can't prove that, but Maryland started running the ball at the end of their possession to try and drain down the clock. So it became this battle of both coaches wanting to take time off the clock and just get into halftime. I think if you'd just gone over and asked them both with 5 minutes left, hey, are you guys just good ending this half? And they probably would have both agreed. So that was, I guess, ironic that you had Maryland doing that, and then Minnesota gets the ball and is able to move it past midfield, and then they want to simply end the half. So here are my thoughts on the end of the half possession. First of all, I want to give a little bit of credit to PJ Fleck for addressing it head on and trying to explain his and not avoiding it and trying to explain his thought process with that. And it was
a horrible thought process about the whole, he's saying something about percentages, and I'm like,
yeah,
I'll tell you, there is no one more analytically gifted in the Gopher football media space than Daniel House. When he said that, House looked at me and was like, excuse me, what was that? But keep going.
Yeah, well, you're right. It was interesting, and it was a little bit of a window into his thought process where, as a fan, or maybe as a more aggressive minded, you know, coach or fan, you're thinking, hey, you're moving the ball, we've got a little bit of time left, let's take some shots and try to get 7 here. In his mind, and this is what he said, what he's thinking of is, we don't want to get sacked and get out of field goal range and have to give up 3 points or the chance at 3 points. That's what was on his mind. It's amazing to, but that's where his mentality was. So he did explain it. And again, I'll give him credit for just telling you where he's at. But where I, what I take issue with is being that deep in your opponent's territory. And I believe it was 2nd and 7 with plenty of time left. And his thought that we don't want to get a sack. We don't. Okay. And he'd mentioned, you know, we think they're going to blitz there, and they did actually end up blitzing. So he was right. If that's the case, then there's a lot you can go to besides, you know, an inside zone handoff. You can, if you think they're going to blitz, you know, if the analytics tell you that, you can go to a screen, you can go to a 3-step drop, you can get the ball out quickly. You can even go to a fade, something that's, you know, a little quicker developing. And you're really not at risk. If you're not calling a long play action, you're not going to be at risk of a sack in that case. So I, my rebuttal to his line of thinking is, look, you, it's 2nd and 7. You can take a shot with being fairly risk averse to taking a sack. There are things you can dial up. And if you don't get it, fine, run the ball on 3rd down, take the time down to 5 seconds. And then kick the field goal, try to kick the field goal with time expiring. So that's where I think it was worthy of at least one shot at the end zone.
So my thought process here, I don't have analytics to back this up, but just kind of anecdotally, what I've seen out of PJ in the past is he gets really skittish when he sees drops and when he sees poorly executed throws, which they did have some of in the first half, right? And I wonder if that kind of plays into it. And I haven't rewatched the game yet to be able to really chart this. But, you know, you had the 2 drops by Michael Brown Stevens. You also have a ball that was, I thought Dalen Wright should have caught, but yes, wasn't a great throw by Tanner Morgan. I wonder if that kind of gets him skittish. At the end of the day, though, this is what frustrates me is you have about as experienced a senior quarterback as you're ever going to have. He's already pretty good at taking care of the football. I recognize that, you know, throwing lanes are going to get compacted when you're on the 16-yard line, but like, trust your quarterback. Just trust him that he's going to make the right play, and you're still going to get that, you're still going to get that field goal off. That's the thing that just frustrates me.
And I would add one more thing. I've personally been more critical, or at least in my mind, of their risk aversion between the opponent's 20 and 40 yard line. That's where I think this year has gotten too risk averse. When you're in this case, it happened to be, you know, on the, whatever it was, the 16, 17 yard line, but they only got there because they kept running the ball and it was successful. But what the script has been, or the pattern has been this year, is getting those possessions beyond the 50-yard line, so in opponent territory, in that 25 to 35-yard line sort of deep field goal range. And even then is when they put the brakes on, seemingly, and just say, we're going to hold on to the ball because we think we – well, my criticism with that is that's not a gimme field goal as good as, you know, we think Matthew Trickett is. I think you have to continue to be aggressive until you get – inside of the 30 at least, or inside of the 25. And then look, if the situation presents itself and you want to hold something for what should be a gimme field goal, that's fine. But I've had more of an issue with the play calling from the 20 to 40 yard line.
Couldn't agree with more of that take.
Yeah. And again, I mean, there could have not been a more momentum swing type of play. And again, Minnesota hits the field goal there. Everybody in the stadium isn't okay with it because they wanted to see the shot at the end zone. I get it. But then you would have been up 2 scores going into halftime, plus you get the ball. But obviously, the complete opposite of what Fleck wanted happened. The guy turns the left corner, blocks it, and they are so incredibly fortunate. The guy's hands are made of stone, and he has like 4 different opportunities to pick up the ball in front of him. It's probably a reason he's on defense. He can't pick it up. Minnesota's just able to finally get him down to the ground. But, I mean, that could have – I mean, you go from 20 to 10 going into halftime, if you make that 38-yarder, to it's going to be 17-17 at halftime, and the momentum is completely in Maryland's favor. Yes, you get the ball, but it's it was an incredibly momentum swing momentum-filled swing play that could have even been incredibly more dramatic in the wrong sense. So it is what it is with Fleck. I mean, we asked him about it after. you can go read his answers. I don't agree with the answers, but again, he makes millions of dollars and I don't. So we'll ask him about him. He gave us his answer. We'll see in the coming games here if anything changes.
Yeah, just to close that out, I think the thing that probably has so many scars for fans is the fact that, you know, it's this kind of risk aversion that puts them in the position that they're in now where, you know, they're 5-2 where they should probably be 6-1 with that loss to Bowling Green, which looks worse and worse every week. But the reality is, I mean, this football team is improving, but it is a big asterisk so far, and it's just like, have you learned nothing, you know, from that experience? That, I think, is the thing that you're playing an inferior opponent, I guess, in my opinion, and you gave them an opportunity, and they took advantage and just couldn't execute it in turning it into points. So, frustrating. Once again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, the Goal Line Club does a lot of good, and part of the ways that they do good was exemplified this week at the tailgate. I had a listener come up to me and say, hey, I have a family member that's been going through some stuff, and they reached out to Gopher Football to let them know, and PJ actually got an oar to them with the whole row of the boat thing, and this Goal Line Club member, or was a Goal Line Club member, said, hey, you know, I found out that, you know, my money is part of what goes to Gopher Football, was able to pay for that ore. So if you want to become a member and not only contribute to the football program, but just, you know, the support of people around the state, as PJ builds his Row the Boat brand, the Goal Line Club can be a great way to get involved.
Absolutely. And if you want to learn more about the Goal Line Club, go to goalineclub.org, all one word, /membership. Learn a little bit more about them. There will be more events coming up as well. I believe the luncheons are going to kick in here in hopefully late November, but for sure there is going to be another National Signing Day event. I'm working with the management there behind the scenes about potentially doing another exclusive member-only event with me and Fleck and Luke. And so it's a great support to cause, obviously. A great place to support with the Goal Line Club. 100% of your money goes towards the Gopher Football program. So if you want to learn more, go to goallineclub.org.
All right, so when we look at the defensive side of the ball, the Gophers only give up 16 points on the day. This is a Maryland team that we have to at least acknowledge was depleted of some of their playmakers, but still the stats that the Gopher defense was able to compile is still impressive. They did force an early turnover on the very first possession. 268 yards of total offense for Maryland. They only had 79 of those were rushing, which, you know, if you saw the 2020 season and then blinked and just woke up today and this Gopher defense gave up only 79 yards of rushing, you would be as surprised as many of us are. But man, what an impressive turnaround for them. And then giving up 189 yards of passing yardage, is 7 yard per play pass. Generally speaking, this defense is about as improved as you could imagine coming off of the 2020 season, and kudos to that team, right? And the coaching staff, they were able to find holes in their defense, have players improve. Just a massive turnaround, and this game is another evidence of the fact that, you know, the improvement that they've able to garner with this defense. I guess we probably should start with that rushing defense, or with that rushing defense. I think I've seen most places they're in the top five in rushing defense, which is just shocking given where they were in 2020, Ryan.
I know that you recanted your statement, but it's going to be a weekly bit for me.
Yeah,
are you ready to talk about the Joe Rossi turnaround, or are you still out on him?
No.
I'm still in.
Still pretty impressed.
Back-to-back weeks, Luke Buehr's still in on Joe Rossi?
I'm in, and here's the thing that I do want to qualify that statement with. What I had said, and you can go back and pull up the audio, is I was skeptical that they'd be able to get done with their own recruits. 2020 was the first year that they primarily had mostly their own recruits. Wasn't great. And this is probably a podcast episode in its own right. But what they were able to do within the portal and player development, pretty impressive, right? Like, they were able to get Niles Pickney, Jack Gibbons, etc. A number of these guys have improved over the year. Like, kudos to that staff. I think man, if you had to just roll with what you had on the high school side of the ball, like, yeah, there would have been some improvement. I'm not sure it would have been as good as it is now, but that's just my opinion.
And that's where it, I think to me it all starts up front, and it's 1 through 8. I mean, you've got high enders and Boye Mafe and Niles Pinckney, and I think even Asezi Otemiwu. He has, I mean, I think Asezi the last few games, it's the best couple game stretch I've seen in his career. He's played a lot of snaps, and he has started to figure it out. And now they're getting help with Niles Pinckney and Trill Carter, and that's where I wrote on Gopher Illustrated after the game. This is the best defensive line 1 through 8 that I have covered in my 11 years in the beat. And I even posed that question to Chip Scoggins of the Star Tribune. He's been covering this team longer than I have. I go, in your time, where does this go for defensive line rank? Now, I need to preface it with this. There have been guys over the years that have been really good. The Rashid Hagmans, the Carter Coughlins, the Steven Richardsons, the and so on and so forth. But it's been the one guy. It hasn't been 1 through 4 and then 5 through 8. Because Minnesota's going hockey line shifts 4 in, 4 out more times than not. And there's not a drop in play, and they're controlling the line of scrimmage. Maryland couldn't get anything going. And so, Derek, you played, and you played in the early 2000s there. And, again, to me, I think this is the best defensive line Minnesota's had in my 11 years, and I want to get your perspective. Is where would you put this group against, say, well, I don't know, the 2000 D-line? I'm just trying to garner some perspective here for the listeners. But, again, I know that you know this team better than I have and more have more in-depth knowledge. Where would you put them?
Yeah, I think you do have to probably go back to 1999, 2000, right around there to find a group as talented. There have been good defensive linemen, you know, in between that certainly, and some you know, outstanding individual players, but not as a collective group. So, you know, that 1999, 2000 era, for those that were fans back then or can remember, John Schlecht played in the NFL after his time at Minnesota. Caron Riley, same thing. Greg White, Styles White, he ended up playing in the NFL as well. I think Matt Anderle, who was in my class, who ended up switching over to offensive line. Those four were really good, solid group of four that anchored a really good, particularly in 1999, a pretty good defense. So we're talking 21 years to go back. Now, comparing the two, which is hard to compare eras, I would even say that this 2021 group is deeper. So you mentioned it, Ryan. You're talking about eight guys in heavy rotation that are all playing at a really high level. So this is, you know, to find a group of more than four, you know, 6 or 8 guys that are playing at this level, that goes beyond my time as a player or a fan. So they're, you know, they're playing at a really high level specific to this game on Saturday. I mean, Ryan, you and I texted a little bit, you know, talking about, I mean, Maryland got no push on the offensive line in the run game, none. And, you know, it's even more, I think, impressive. So many times team statistics, I think, you know, midway or earlier in the season are really a function of who you've played. You know, you can talk about, well, this such and such a team has had a great running offense. Well, if you go and look and they've played, you know, a bunch of terrible run defenses, that's kind of, you know, there's a big grain of salt there. Minnesota, particularly the front seven, is playing at a really solid level. And it's, to me, even more impressive when you consider they've already played Purdue, Nebraska, and Maryland, 3 really good offenses in the Big Ten. So there's a lot to, you know, we can talk a little bit about X's and O's and things like that, but really impressive, you know, so far as the, going back to last year, the improvement that just seems to keep getting better week to week.
Luke, you got any D-line thoughts before I continue to wax poetically?
No, I mean, defensive line has been vastly improved. And Ryan, you let us know this was coming, right? And part of it was, you know, some of it's the transfers. But, you know, sure. they had guys that have also just improved. And that has to be stated. And frankly speaking, their high school D-line recruiting was better, right? Like they've been able to recruit, they've been able to redshirt guys, and that goes a long way. And you bring up Asezi, and I think that's a really good point. think about Asezi and how like he was so close but just couldn't make plays, and now he's actually making plays, and what a difference that makes.
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point, I mean, a defensive tackle right now, Minnesota and the portal have really found a good relationship, because you do have Val Martin, you do have Niles Pinckney, Mike Adu-Treadway, all three very old, all three transfers in, plus you got Trill Carter, your high school kid there, but it's the defensive end spots too, because I mean, we've talked about a lot about Asezi and how, you know, he's kind of been out there over the years. I mean, he's just been out there, hasn't made a ton of great plays. And now, I mean, even during the week, you saw the Senior Bowl start to show him love. And I get it, because he's 6'5 and a half, you know, 280 pounds. And he's finally, I think D-line coach Chad Wilt deserves a lot of credit here, because he's finally starting to unlock some of these guys. Like Asezi, he gets a full offseason with him. Asezi finally has the light start to come on here the last few weeks. Boye Mafe continues to play well, even though the stats maybe not are backing it up. He had another 3-4 pressures against Taulia this past week, and I think he is playing the best football we've seen against the run, and he's selling out for the run. That's helping Jack Gibbons and Mariano Sorry-Marin. All MJ Anderson continues to do is when he gets on the field for 20 to 25 snaps, he's making impactful plays, and then you've also got Thomas Rush there, who has, I think, 15-something pressures on the year already. And it's so deep. And that's where, again, yes, it is, some of it's the portal, and they've definitely hit on some guys in the portal, which is always nice to have, but it also is that high school development, because when Boye and Asezi and Niles and Val and Mike Adu-Treadway are no longer here, you've allowed some of these 2019 and 2020 and even 2021 D-line classes to get another year in the weight room to hopefully continue this depth going forward. But to me, I mean, it starts up front. Why can't Maryland run the ball? Well, I mean, I don't know that they're a particularly good running team, but 23 for 79 is what Minnesota's done all year. And because they've been so good up front, I mean, Jack Gibbons, here's the statement I made, Derek, and I want you to call me out one way or another, is I was thinking about it last night. I think Jack Gibbons has the best instincts for a Gopher linebacker since Damian Wilson. Now, I remember Blake Cashman, certainly, Kamal Martin and Thomas Barber, but I think those guys are kind of different kind of backs, where Jack kind of strikes me more of as your prototypical Mike with good instincts. I mean, we even saw on Saturday, there's two huge screen snips where he's able to sniff those out, turn them into negative plays, where if he doesn't, I mean, that thing would have probably been an explosive play. Where does Jack Gibbons rank for you instinctually in recent years at linebacker?
Yeah, he's up or near the top. I would agree with you. And something fun, you know, if you happen to attend the games, we've talked about this with previous good defensive players, just zero in on him and watch him make his reads and reaction, no matter what it is. And to your point, Ryan, he's gotten so quick, and it wasn't always like that. I mean, early in the year, it's a guy, and I don't know what system they had at Abilene Christian, but clearly this is at least somewhat of a new system for him. So it took a little bit of adjustment. And it's that progression we talk about in development of college players, that you really first have to be solid in your assignments, and then you can work on your technique. And when those two things are sound, then it's effort and speed. And he's clearly at that third phase now, but it's really exciting and just kind of fun to watch him make his read and react to, as you mentioned, a couple screens to sniff those out, or draw a play, something like that, or even play action. I mean, he's up and he goes through his progression, if you will, so quickly now, and is able to react and close on things. So yeah, I can't think of many people, or if any really, that come to mind at this point, as far as being a complete, you know, instinctual, you know, he's playing possessed right now, as most of the rest of the front seven are.
Anything else you want to add on linebackers? Because I do want to talk some defensive back here, Ryan.
I would just say that as good as Jack is playing, I think that exponentially helps Mariano. Yes. Now, did he get caught out of positions a couple times? Yes. I think on that 12-yard touchdown run, Mariano got his eyes looking in the wrong spot. He's part of the reason. But Mariano being able to trust the guy alongside him, has allowed him to play faster. And while I don't know that you saw a ton of impactful plays, you know, that were incredibly flashy or anything like that, you look up at the end of the day, and while Jack Gibbons has 10 total tackles, 1.5 for loss, Mariano's got 8 tackles and a half tackle for loss too. And the less we have to talk about Mariano, I think the better. I'd also say, on maybe a more somber note, I don't think that was Braylon Oliver's best game.
No.
I think, struggled pretty good for chunks of that game, which is unfortunate, but they're going to need him to figure it out.
He struggles with that window dressing often. When there's a lot of motion and a lot of misdirection and stuff, he needs to play like fast, right? And it's just got to be like one read and go. Otherwise, if he thinks, he gets in trouble.
Yeah, and that progression we talked about is exactly that window dressing, Luke, can be post-snap as well. Yes. What a team like Maryland wants to do is they want the opposing linebackers to have to check 3 things before they can get into their fit. So it's not, they don't check one thing and then say, okay, I got to run fit the B gap. Nope. They have to check, you know, the blocking. They've got to check, you know, a running back releasing into the flat. They've got to check bubble screen, and then they can get to their run fit, whatever it is. So if you can, like we just mentioned with Jack Gibbons, get through that progression really quickly, you have time to go make a play on the ball, which Maryland's offense is going to force you to do in space somewhere. If you can't get through that progression quickly, you're going to be late. Being late is going to lead to bad angles, and you're not going to be able to finish on the play. So it's guys right now, 2 guys at 2 different levels in that progression. So I didn't want to forget something we saw on Saturday against Maryland, but I think this year has gotten better and better with each game, is just the pursuit from the inside out was, you can tell that they had worked on that in practice, was incredible. Several times, as we know, Maryland likes to spread the ball out, make you defend sideline to sideline. Several times you saw defensive linemen making plays on the sideline. And I don't know if we've seen at least the frequency that we're seeing now that we've ever seen that, you know, Asezi, as you mentioned, Ryan, and some of those defensive, even tackles making plays on the perimeter. Well, that only happens because of the pursuit from inside out, which I think is as good as it's ever been in the Joe Rossi era.
Yeah. And I do want to mention too, like some of the pressure that they're able to provide Taulia. My bad, was a function too of they had for the most part, they were able to cover all pretty well, right? And some of those were long developing plays, and then he had to scramble and then got himself in trouble, like, you know, that very first drive, right? You know, they brought some pressure, but they were able to pick it up fairly well, and then he starts to scramble and gets himself in trouble. Like I actually thought this secondary played better, I think you said it already, Ryan, but this is kind of the Justin Wally coming out party. This Big Ten play, like, this kid looks like he is going to be a flat out stud.
You ready for another dad joke? Cause I am.
Yeah.
I would say that Terrell Smith has now been Wally, Walley, pipped by Mr. Justin Wally at this stage, because again, I don't think Terrell Smith is playing particularly well right now, is what it is, but when Wally gets in a one-on-one situation, you saw it down the field. Again, he's able to get a hand on it, and he knows how to play the ball well. And there's something to absolutely be said for that. And to me, Wally's the one I want to roll with alongside Coney Durr there. Now they're going to continue to rotate in tee time and Philip Howard in spots. But I think it should be, while Coney's going to play 95-something% of the snaps, I think you roll with Justin Wally here the next couple of weeks against some passing offenses that aren't particularly good. And I think the thing I want to ask Derek about is, again, I have these thoughts and I want to hear if you think I'm an idiot or if I'm not, but you know, Jordan Howden, yes, you know, he leaves some things in coverage to be desired at times. He got turned around on that long post across the middle there, but his improvement in space tackling from just 1 year ago, I think hasn't been talked about enough, because I think Jordan Howden has been one of the better tacklers on this team. And I think there's some pretty good tacklers on this team. And I feel like we haven't talked enough about what Howden, again, he's been solid. Has he been incredibly flashy? No, but he's making plays a couple times a game where it's like, if he doesn't make that play, it's an explosive one. And instead it's a 4-yard game. Now, mm-hmm. do you think I'm crazy or what do you think of Howden's improvement, especially against the run?
Yeah, well, I think it's a good segue actually to the, if you look at the teams that the Gophers are going to play in the rest of the schedule as well. But I think what you're seeing, Ryan, is a couple things. One, that progression we've talked about where just the more experienced guys get, Tyler Newbitt, I would say the same thing. He had a big problem with angles, you know, in his first playing time, particularly in run support. He's gotten better. Jordan Howden as well. But the other part of it is, I think just goes back to what they're able to do right now in the front seven, which is putting the secondary in a better position. When you're out of position in the front seven and that running back, or even if it's a short catch and run, if those guys are in space, huge holes, and they're getting an untouched run into the secondary, you're going to be out of position. So I don't want to take too much away from the safeties, because again, I want to give them credit. They've gotten better, but I think it's also a function of what the front seven's been able to do, you know, particularly in run support and short pass support. You know, on the safety play, when you play zone defense, I know if there's anything to kind of nitpick on is the Gophers have given up some chunk plays, particularly in passing. But with zone defense, you're going to have that from time to time if you're not crisp in all your zone reads and reactions. And these teams you're playing, they watch film too. You know, Maryland is running some of the same concepts that Ohio State hurt the Gophers with. And one play in particular, probably their longest play, was exact copy of an Ohio State concept from the first game. So they're able to watch film as well. But playing that zone defense and sitting back, those safeties to this point, for the most part, have been, you know, we've got to keep things in front of us. We've got to make sure that we don't let anything, you know, get behind us and come up and run support. But to your point, Ryan, that's going to change going forward, starting probably to some degree with Northwestern, but particularly with Wisconsin and Iowa, where you're really going to need the safeties to come down and run support against these really run heavy teams. And that's going to be the true test, I think, for the safeties and on where they're at with their run fits.
It is once again time for Gopher Math. And again, Gopher Math is brought to you by Ayers Rock Planning. Go to their website, ayersrockplanning.com. Find them on Twitter. Slide into the DMs. Because at the end of the day, you are going to have to pay taxes. And if you want to find a way to lower that tax burden and you want it personalized to you and you want your tax professional to bring you a plan, and not just for 1 year, but basically for your life going forward, reach out to Ayers Rock Planning. Ryan, again, what do you get if you win Gopher Math?
You get 2 free months of Gopher Illustrated. At this point, you get it through Christmas. You get it all the way. You get all the juicy recruiting stuff that's going to happen here after the Wisconsin game. You get to know where Flex going on the road. You get to know about the official visitors that'll be coming in. Those will be the days where you will say, boy, I wish I would have paid more attention to Gopher Gridiron Radio, because you're going to be hitting F5 constantly. That's what many members do. It's not a fun time for me because I'm up from the before dawn to after dark. And it's a fun time to learn all about the things that'll be going into National Signing Day. But Luke, what is the question for this week?
Again, PEMDAS does not apply. Tanner Morgan completions plus seconds remaining in the
Tanner Morgan completions from the Maryland game. Yeah, we need to be specific.
Good clarification. All right. Tanner Morgan completions from the Maryland game, seconds remaining in the second quarter when Minnesota used its last timeout, again from the Maryland game, minus Minnesota's longest play from scrimmage. Find your phones, tag Gopher Radio, tag Ryan Burns, tag Ayers Rock Plans, and enter to win 2 months of GI. All right, we have to talk some special teams because it is a part of the game. While not a great day for the unit as a whole, it didn't come back to bite the Gophers. Matthew Trickett on the day, 2 for 4 field goals, 1 blocked, 1 miss, 4 for 4 on extra points, a total of 10 points. He made the 43-yarder. I don't know. The 50 yarder doesn't bug me that much, but I haven't looked back at how many he's missed, but he's consistently missed the last couple games from that distance. And, you know, Derek, again, you bring up a good point. Like, it's almost like they have almost too much confidence in him where it's like, hey, we're just going to make sure we get the three and, you know, shut it down or not shut it down, but, you know, take the air out of the ball and make sure that you do whatever you can to salvage 3 points. And, you know, he hasn't been able to necessarily execute in every situation. That then again, he has made exponentially more long range field goals than we saw in the last, 1,000 some days, Ryan?
Well, here's what I'll say is stop having Matthew Trickett attempt 50 yard field goals. He's 1 of 4, and he's now 1 of 6 in his entire collegiate kicking career from 50 plus. Throw Dragan Kesich out there, because I watched him do it in the spring. I watched him do it in fall practice. In fall practices, when we were there, Matthew Trickett would get to 48 yards. And then for anything 50 plus, they would put Dragan Kesich out there, who's the kickoff guy. And he's got a hell of a leg. Now, I don't know that leg's the issue for Trickett from that deep, but clearly when a guy's now 1 of 6 in his career from 50 plus, why are you throwing him out there?
Well,
why are you expecting a different result? I don't understand that.
Yeah, the thing to keep in mind when you kick, right, it's kind of similar to golf, right? Where if you try and just swing harder, your fundamentals can break down more. And in theory, when you kick, it should be kind of the same thing every time. And then your maximum output is your maximum output. But, you know, if he's trying to put a little bit more into it, your fundamentals can break down. I'm with you.
I just roll with Dragic. No, I mean, roll with Matthew Trickett, because he's an above average to good college kicker from like 45 and in. And then anything over that, why not unleash the Dragan?
Yeah, that's
see
what
if
I'm
he's
saying.
Got a little bit of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't have the pressure off the right edge, Rob Wenger, and nearly cost Minnesota a 10-point swing. But here we are again. I mean, I don't think there's other than that. It was incredibly quiet on special teams. There was not a punt return because Brock Anixtead lines up 40, 50, maybe even 60 yards back, lets everything bounce in front of him, and then it rolls right at him where he was standing. Kick return, Bucky had 1 for 20. I mean, gave Minnesota an extra 5 yards field position, and then Maryland didn't really do much else. I mean, their punter had a day.
Yeah, Mark Crawford had one pretty nice punt of 47, but I mean, nothing spectacular, but the fact he only had to punt once is also awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, it shows you what the offense was doing, but here we are again. Special teams nearly cost him the game. Didn't bite him this time. Can't have these mistakes once again against better teams. But again, I don't know if they'll be there the next 2 weeks, hopefully, with that. So,
Derek,
it is what it is.
One question for you, Derek. This week Ryan sent us both a picture of you in a very iconic photo blocking against Penn State. So when you prepare for a team like Maryland and they happen to come off the edge for that, how do they prep for these kind of situational kick things? How do they prep you for a team, any team week to week, and mm-hmm. how to prepare?
Yeah, so you do as much of a you hate it as an offensive lineman, they do rep that quite a bit during the week, field goal protection. And so you obviously scout it like you do anything else, and you set up the defense or the scout defense, and you don't do too many live reps because, you know, you don't want to risk injury, but you try to mimic what you've seen on film. So if you have a team that's blocking things off the edge, you might cheat and actually have them get a little bit of a leg up to make it harder for the offense or the protection team to block it up. Or if they're, you know, good at coming over the guards, you know, with something, you know, some kind of leaping strategy or something that's legal, you'll try to mimic that in practice. So just as you would anything else, you try to get a good look out of the scout team or the team that's trying to, you know, mimic what you're going to see on Saturday and get it blocked up. So the question then would be, has Maryland shown that block strategy before? And if they have, then they clearly didn't get it. You know, either they didn't get enough good reps or didn't have a good enough strategy. If they waited and held that in their pocket and that was the first time they showed that block strategy, then it's a credit to them for catching Minnesota off guard. Sometimes you'll see teams, you know, when they scout the protection scheme, and they'll see a weakness and say, hey, we've decided that, you know, this particular blocker isn't good, or these two guys aren't good off the right side. That's where we're going to put together a left block strategy, and here's how it's going to work. So it's a chess match like it is with any other phase. And I'm not sure which, you know, what happened on Saturday in particular, but that's in this day and age, you know, it's exceedingly rare, and you can't have that. As Ryan mentioned, several attempts at a scoop and score, and they just couldn't come up with it. So really kept them from 7 points off the board. Really was their own fault, just not being able to scoop and score. So hope to get that cleaned up moving forward.
Any parting thoughts, you who loves to get on their soapbox about special teams?
It's got to be better.
Yeah.
That's all I got is, I mean, you can't have a blocked PAT.
Did we see our first non-touchback attempt on a kickoff? I think they attempted one sky kick, one box kick where you try to kick it to the sideline inside the 10-yard line. That was something of note, and I don't think they got it deep enough, frankly. But that was, to me, an attempted. I mean, that was a strategy, right?
I was trying to hypothesize whether or not it was an attempt or it was just a missed kick. And I think it was an attempt, but it wasn't. I agree. It wasn't executed particularly well on the kick.
It seemed like the trajectory on his touchbacks have been so low that and that one was much, much higher that you'd think it was purposeful, but you might be right. He might have mishit it.
Yeah. I generally would think that too. I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt that he maybe just miskicked it, which can happen. But yeah, I think that was the strategy there. But I'm with you, Ryan. Special teams does need to be better. It didn't come back and bite them. And again, avoiding giving up the touchdown and the block kick was just, wow, it was a blessing because that should have been a touchdown. Ryan. Insurance is one of those necessities that you need as an adult. I found that out pretty early in my young adult life. And where do I go if I want to be able to find someone to shop and find me the best insurance rate in the market?
Well, I would recommend that you go to the Burns Insurance Agency in Oakdale, Minnesota. It's owned by my father, Bill Burns. And he's a man that believes in service, service, service. Now, his goal is not to be the biggest insurance agency, but to be the best possible agency that can put your needs first, providing you with the service that you deserve. I'll tell you, many of you listeners have contacted him for a free quote and have switched over. You have experienced the exemplary service that you deserve. Now, again, he is a local independent insurance agent who is a big Gopher football fan. If you want great savings, great coverages, and above all else, great services, you need to contact him at insurancebyburns.com. Email him today for a free quote to make sure on your auto, your home, your commercial, your boat, whatever it may be, you think you're paying too much, shoot him an email at bill@insurancebyburns.com to find out today.
All right, let's take a look around the Big Ten. Maybe just let's take a look at the standings first and foremost. Minnesota is tied with Iowa for the lead in the Big Ten West at 3-1. I think Minnesota technically owns their own destiny here because they do play Iowa and Wisconsin still. With Purdue losing to Wisconsin, they're not out of it, but I think a lot can still change. But generally speaking, with those two losses, they're in a much tougher position. I'll start by saying this and pose this question to you guys: how do you think fans were feeling at the Bowling Green after the Bowling Green loss, and would they have taken the Bowling Green loss knowing that they'd still have a chance to win the Big Ten West sitting after 7 games total?
I mean, why wouldn't you? Like, is the crazy. The Bowling Green loss is egregious. I mean, no doubt still the worst loss of the Fleck era, but it's weird to me how this team has rattled off 3 straight wins. And I think pretty convincing in all 3, but games where I think they should have probably won the game, especially the last 2 weeks, I think have been convincing at home. And I mean, Minnesota's not getting any votes in the polls. I don't know that they will going into Iowa, even if they win the next 2 weeks, because all anybody can think about is that Bowling Green loss. And again, if Minnesota wins again this weekend, which they're, oh, we can talk about that game here in a bit, but I mean, you're 4-0 in the West, or 3-1, so they're 3-1, whatever. I mean, if they're 5-1 going into Iowa in Big Ten play, why shouldn't they be ranked? I mean, if Iowa, that instance, is going to be ranked, I mean, why shouldn't Minnesota? Now, Iowa's got to be able to get through a Wisconsin team. But, Luke, you know, we talked about earlier how if Minnesota, you know, set the game of football back by 30 years, here's a stat for you. Wisconsin did not complete a pass in the final 44 minutes and 16 seconds of their game against Purdue. And they still won. Like, yeah, if you think PJ Fleck may not trust Tanner Morgan, Paul Chryst doesn't want anything to do with Graham Mertz to the point where they're not even attempting or completing passes for the remaining 44 minutes of a game, and they somehow still won. That is incredible to me.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to how much confidence they have in Graham Mertz, right?
It also speaks to how much Jeff Brohm can never get up for another game after winning a top five, I guess. See, this is what Jeff Brohm does every year. He does what he does to Iowa, or he beats Ohio State. I mean, he beats these top five, top 10 teams. And then the next week where it's a winnable game, I mean, we talked about it last week in the preview, Luke. I mean, Aiden O'Connell needed to be good. Aiden O'Connell turned the ball over three times to Jim Leonard. Mm-hmm. And that didn't go well. Whereas Wisconsin's able to rack up 290 rushing yards, three scores. You know, they got Ches Malusi and Braylon Allen out there, but it's just like I don't know that I've seen this in the modern age where Wisconsin so little trusts their quarterback that they literally didn't complete a pass for the final 44 minutes of the game. And oh, by the way, Derek, they still won by three scores.
Well, I couldn't believe I watched the game, obviously delayed because that was happening. But when I saw the box score, my first thought was, okay, Wisconsin's finally got something going in the run game. You know, I think they put up 30 points. And for most of the first half, maybe deep into the second half, it was pretty low scoring, pretty tight. When I saw the final, I thought, okay, Wisconsin's going to get things going. And when I watched the game back, as you just pointed out, was not the case at all. I do think Wisconsin's running the ball a little better because Purdue's defense, as we've talked about previously, is not your typical bad Purdue defense. But the other part of it is turnovers, five turnovers for Purdue. I mean, that to me is more of the story, and it, which kind of leads to another interesting just ponderance for me is you look at Wisconsin and Iowa, I think consensus would have them as the best defenses in the West. Now we've talked a lot about where Minnesota's defense has gotten now, particularly this year, but it's amazing how those defenses, particularly Iowa, are doing it a lot through turnovers. Minnesota is not. So You could look at the Gopher defense and say, well, they're playing really well, but they're not getting it. You could look at that as a negative and say they're not getting the turnovers maybe that they should be, or that's something they need to work on. Or you could look at it and say, Minnesota's defense is playing as well as they are while not getting the advantage of turnovers. So that was to me the Purdue Wisconsin game after watching it back was no, they've not figured it out passing the ball at all. The running's getting a little better, but turnovers is what killed Purdue.
My favorite thing about like Iowa and Wisconsin's offenses right now is like, you know, what's a great, here's the point I'm trying to make. Wisconsin had two scoring drives on the day, boys, where they had negative yards. They had a four-play negative three-yard field goal, and they had a four-play negative four-yard field goal. I mean, if that doesn't exactly sum up where things are at for Wisconsin and Iowa offensively, it's
– I think one of those, Ryan, if I recall correctly, and someone will tweet or something and correct us, but I think one of those turnovers – Wisconsin got the ball first and goal. I think it was an interception or a scoop fumble. I can't remember, but they returned it to Purdue's inside the five, and they didn't get a touchdown. They had first and goal, I believe.
The one. Yeah, it was right before half. They had first and goal at the one, and then they had three shots at it. nothing. I mean,
and it's ended up with a field goal.
Oh my goodness. It's, well, here's the funny part is now Wisconsin and Iowa play this week. Mm-hmm. So can anybody guess what the line is, the Vegas line for that game? It is Wisconsin versus Iowa in Madison.
In Madison.
I want you to guess the number one, the over under on that game, because two incredibly inefficient offenses against two of the best defenses in the Big Ten. What do you think the spread is, and what do you think the over under is?
I can go first. I bet that the over under is 36, and I will give Wisconsin 3.
I was going to go over under of 35, and I would give Iowa 3. Iowa with minus 3 in the.
All right. So the opening line via Circus Sports here on Sunday afternoon, it is Wisconsin minus 3 over under. You are both essentially right. 36.5.
Wow.
Is the over under in that game. So Vegas thinks this is going to be something like, say, 20-17. Which that seems like maybe even a lot of points. But again, to me, that game, well, here's the thing that I think we need to discuss is before we get into, again, we can get into the Northwestern and next week and different things like that. But who should fans be pulling for? Because again, I get it. You hate both schools is what it is. But like, I think the theory should be, well, here's the two theories. You guys pick which one you want to hitch your wagon to. If Iowa wins, Wisconsin is essentially knocked out of the West race. They have three losses in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. Minnesota and Iowa would, in theory, both be at one after the week if Minnesota can take care of business. And then it's setting up to be a two-team race. Now, if Wisconsin wins, it makes it very interesting because then both Wisconsin and Iowa are at two Big Ten losses. And Minnesota would be sitting at one. Minnesota still would then, in theory, control their own destiny. They'd need to at least split. I believe against Iowa and Wisconsin, depending on how it all shake out. So which one do you think fans should be rooting for this upcoming weekend? Wisconsin win to make Iowa a two-loss Big Ten team, or an Iowa win to essentially knock Wisconsin out of the Big Ten West race?
Honestly, I pick I root for Wisconsin so that it becomes just absolute craziness into November. Like, that's what I want. But – boy, I don't know what you want as a Minnesota fan. At the end of the day, Minnesota controls your own destiny. You take care of business, you win. But it's not. I don't think that's the way it's going to roll. I just don't see that happening. What do you think, Derek?
Well, first of all, it's just funny. I do really enjoy being a fan of college football now, because I can tell you, Ryan, as a player or a coach, you would be cast into the sun for even thinking about what these other teams are going to do. And, you know, the coaches want the players and the team focused on,
again, you know, doubt. Yada, yada, yada. But it's also,
it's what's fun. It's fun to have that liberty, to have that privilege, to be able to look around. So really good question, Ryan. I think don't you have to root for Iowa? Because that would simply, you're right, Luke, you control your own destiny, but that takes away one factor. If Wisconsin wins, now you've got two factors, or you're looking at potentially having to, you got to take care of business either way, but it's less interesting, certainly, from a Big Ten or maybe national perspective, but it eliminates one factor right off the board, and then it's down to, if Minnesota takes care of business the next couple of weeks, then it's down to Iowa, Minnesota, right?
Yeah, well, I guess the way you got to think about it, though, is like, what do you think is Minnesota's better matchup, right? And I think
I don't know that it necessarily matters.
Yeah, I think they're playing at
Kinnick is the tougher, in theory, right? Is the tougher matchup. So that, but yeah, I see what you're saying, Luke.
Yeah,
I mean, well, before we talk, I do want to talk a little bit about the 9 overtime debacle, where it's a 9 overtime game per se, and there's only 38 total points, which is incredibly Big Ten.
Can we focus on that for a little bit? Because I laugh. Okay, so if you're aware, the game is tied going in to overtime. The score is 10-10. Okay. Now, remind me, did the rule change this year, or was it the year before that you have to start?
I think it was this year, and it Oh my God, what in the hell?
And the whole premise of the rule, in my opinion, is that it doesn't go to like 9 overtimes. It's so that you get the game over with as soon as possible, right? So basically, you just execute 2-point conversions, right? Which, number one, Derek, you can answer this for us. How many 2-point conversion plays does an average team have, right? Do they have 9?
2 or 3. Yeah, exactly. Literally 2 or 3. And you're right, Luke. This rule change had to be about timing for the game because there's so much money involved in television that they do not, as fun or wacky of a game as it might have been for fans, they absolutely don't want that because you're eating into the next time slot. And I believe those teams went combined 0 for 10 on 2-point tries until they both converted the next one.
Did you?
Ryan, that was insane.
Have you watched it, Ryan?
No. Okay. It was Minnesota's first quarter, and I was just watching Twitter just go, they are 0 of 12 on these to start. What is happening?
You have to go back and watch it because it literally, at a certain point, like, it's obvious that they are out of plays, and you're just like, they're just like, you know, because for the most part on 2-point conversions, they're usually like trick plays, right? Or they're like Cole Kramer, we're actually going to throw it. Or, you know, they threw on back to Clifford. By the way, Clifford was not healthy and they definitely shouldn't have played him. But they did. And man alive, oh man, it was like the perfect storm of like everything, you know, in theory is supposed to go this way, but in practice it went the total opposite way. I was dying. It was so funny.
If this happens again, which it might, you know, I think we can expect another rule change coming up with overtime because they don't want that. But you're right, Luke. It's 2 to 3. Each team typically has 2 to 3 2-point plays. You've got a couple runs, and usually the only passing play you have is either a fade or some sort of rub route. So, yeah, after the fourth or fifth try, you're either going back and trying the same plays again, or you're just reaching into the playbook and just calling things at random at that point.
All right. So
yes, by the way, is there any doubt that Penn State got caught either looking ahead to this game this upcoming weekend for them, or James Franklin just already has his eyes set on either LSU or USC?
Honestly, I think that I listened to the Eyes on Big podcast last night, which they got out incredibly early. Kudos to you guys, Big Kurt and Jeffrey the Greek. But they kind of went with the whole theory of like, did Sean Clifford not practice at all? And they had zero faith in the backup quarterback and they still threw him out there and he was not great. And again, how can Penn State not run the football? Like, they cannot run the football. They had like 68 yards on the day.
It was not good. And now, oh, by the way, Penn State gets to travel to Columbus to take on Ohio State, Ohio State looks like the best team in the country right now. And I don't care what you tell me because that team just, I mean, I think Indiana's defense is an above average Big Ten defense. And they just, I mean, they put up like 44 in the first half. And I think Indiana didn't even particularly play that bad. They are,
and I don't think,
humming.
And I don't think that's a ridiculous take, Ryan, when you consider that Clemson is not Clemson this year. And I don't think Alabama is Alabama either. So Georgia looks incredibly good, but that's probably not. That's probably a pretty reasonable take considering how well Ohio State's playing and how the other three usual suspects are not looking in typical form.
Can we just look at some stats real quick on that game? It just blows my mind. CJ Stroud, 21 of 28 for 266 yards, 4 touchdowns. He had a QBR of 97.8. And it's like, oh, let's bring in the backup, Kyle McCord, 5 of 6, 51 yards, 97.1. And then Travion Henderson, 8 carries, 81 yards. Like, the luxury that they have at the wide receiver position, and CJ Stroud, obviously good, but you know, what we saw in week one versus what they are now, they're in like a completely different stratosphere.
They are the best team in the Big Ten, and I think maybe the best team in the country now. Now they are going to be tested in coming weeks, more so than maybe they were. But I mean, CJ Stroud, I think a lot of people gave up on him after the first couple games. That boy's coming to play, and there's a reason that he was a 5-star. Mm-hmm. I also want to touch on I want one more thing before we can talk a little bit of Northwestern. Is I will say it now, and I texted the Eyes on Big Ten podcast, Jeffrey the Greek, this. I will bet you, and here's the disclaimer, if Nebraska continues to play hard over their next four games, I will go on record in stating I fully 100% believe Nebraska will beat either Wisconsin or Iowa.
All right.
And it could be that final game of the season where Iowa's got to travel to Lincoln. And I just think that Nebraska's too talented. And I think, I mean, do you think it's outlandish? Because I think Nebraska's a decent football team that has just been terrible in close games. But if they can get healthy off the bye here and get a little bit of momentum, if I was Wisconsin and Iowa, that's not a team I'd want to play.
I'll add this. You asked a good question, Derek, last week. You know, what quarterback would you take in the Big Ten West over Tanner Morgan? I'll turn it around and say, what offense would you pick outside of Purdue? When, you know, obviously Purdue really struggled this week, but what's the next best offense? And I think, to me, it's Nebraska. Like, I think that Nebraska is that, and I don't think your take, Ryan, is outlandish.
Derek, what do you think?
Yeah, no. Well, interesting to me that we just got done talking about the line of is Wisconsin -3. So we talked about this a little bit last week. Is the Iowa loss to Purdue more? I feel like it's being chalked up to Jeff Brohm has Iowa, which he certainly does have Ferentz's number. This is Purdue reaching up and beating a ranked team like they do every once in a while, and it's just sort of being. Maybe it's being dismissed a little too much. Maybe it's, well, I kept coming away from that game with the notion that what is going on with Iowa? What is the real Iowa offense? We know their defense is really good, right up there with Wisconsin. Their special teams is the best in the Big Ten, not debatable. But Ryan, you've been on it and you've taken some shots for this. They've been plus a million in the take give. We saw against Purdue that didn't happen, and look at what happened to their offense. So are we seeing a little bit of Iowa is not the Iowa everybody has thought they are, or is it just, yep, it's Purdue. They lost to Purdue. They have their number. It's one bad game and they're going to go right back to humming along.
To give you some betting perspective, you know, with, with the idea of Purdue and like what people think of Purdue, what do you think the over under is for the Purdue Nebraska game this week with, and also guess the spread?
I will say Nebraska -6, and I will say over under 48.
I'm right there. I was going to say Nebraska touchdown, so I'll go Nebraska -7. I'll go with the over under at 58.
Yeah, you're right on basically, Ryan. 48.5 and -6. Like, I mean, I think Nebraska, I still think Nebraska's better than their record. They just find a way to beat themselves. And I think, honestly, if I'm going to pick a Big Ten West offense, I might even pick Nebraska's over Purdue's. Like, I like what Nebraska does.
Well, here's the thing you got to take into account, too. So Nebraska was idle this past week. They get a bye week to prepare for Purdue, and then they also get Ohio State at home. They get another bye week before Wisconsin, and then they end the season with Iowa. It's like you get two bye weeks. I mean, you're going to be – you have an extra week to prepare for Purdue. You're going to have an extra week to prepare for Madison. I just think that, again, it's a big if because we've seen Scott Frost teams in the past maybe shut down a little bit. If they continue to play hard, I think they get to 5-7. I mean, I think they'll beat Purdue. I think they will not beat Ohio State. But, I just think that they're too talented. Mm-hmm. To not figure it out against what are two anemic offenses to end the year. And you get the Iowa game at home, and that's going to be, I believe, on Black Friday at 12:30. So, I mean, wouldn't that be something where maybe Minnesota knows, you know, if you beat Madison at home, you get a shot at Indy. But, again, Minnesota's got to take care of business before that. And it starts this weekend where they have to travel to Ryan Field in Evanston for a 2:30 game, where there's going to be over under 6,000 fans there.
Well,
because this is.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just want to make sure we touch on the what we saw from Northwestern this week before we get into the game.
I was just about to say they lost 33-7. Northwestern has not scored more than they have scored 7 points, 21-7. Yep. Their offense is not exactly a world beater. And they are pretty banged up right now. I think we're back to the musical chairs thing at quarterback. We've seen a lot of different quarterbacks this season. I think we've seen three so far, for Northwestern, between Ryan Helinski, Hunter Johnson, Andrew Marty, something called Carl Richardson also got in the game. So I don't know, fellas. I mean, it's just like, I think 17 points beats Northwestern with where they're at offensively. Now, I will say it's the Evan Hall revenge game.
Yes.
Which, if Derek, you don't know who Evan Hall is, it's their leading rusher. He's from Maple Grove. Minnesota decided not to offer him. He's averaging 6.4 yards a carry. But this offense just overall, I mean, it's not very good. I don't know that their run defense is actually good either. We just saw Michigan. Now, that game was close at halftime, and then Michigan kind of pulled away there. But we saw Michigan absolutely devastate them on the ground. They ran for nearly 300 yards. And then just 2 weeks ago in Lincoln, I mean, we saw Nebraska put up 427 rushing yards, which is insane. So I'm going to set the over-under at Tanner Morgan passing attempts at 15.5. For this game, it feels like a game where Minnesota wins 24-7, because I don't think that if Fleck has to, he's going to really open things up. Now you got to be able to, you know, Minnesota's had some issues at Ryan Field, I think, over the last decade. But this is not a Northwestern team that is playing particularly well. Do you guys have any thoughts, Derek, on this Northwestern team heading into Evanston this weekend?
Well, the thing I'm going to be looking for is the approach on offense for the Gophers. I think we've established, and I've personally built up quite a bit of confidence in the Gophers defense. And for the reasons you mentioned, I don't think we should be particularly scared about Northwestern's offense. But Minnesota's approach is what I'm going to be looking for, because Northwestern, although the talent levels are different between them and Iowa and Wisconsin at the moment, they have some of the same philosophies and how they manage games and how they try to eliminate mistakes. And so how Minnesota approaches it is going to be interesting. And I guess if I had to put a little bit of a negative spin on it, I wouldn't dismiss the fact that, you know, look at how Minnesota played in the second half of Miami of Ohio. I don't think it's fair probably to call up the Bowling Green game, because it's a different scenario. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, if they go really risk averse, they try to keep everything inside. This could be really, I don't want to say use the word ugly, but it could be a little more interesting than I think what people are thinking. Don't want that to happen, but that's what I'll be watching for, is the approach on offense.
Luke?
Yeah. I think, you know, Ryan, how much respect I have for Pat Fitzgerald. And I think,
He's probably, I mean, you could say he's among the top couple of coaches in the Big Ten for what he's been able to do at Northwestern with not the caliber of athlete than maybe some of the other schools have. But I also just don't think they have the horses that, if Minnesota actually plays aggressive for the first 30 minutes offensively, and this thing is, say, 17-3 at halftime, I can assure you, Northwestern's offense is not built to come from behind, and Minnesota's just going to try to bleed this thing out.
Yeah.
What do you think?
And I do think that at the end of the day, I think it's going to probably be dictated in that first quarter. I think it's going to be a good indication of what we're going to see the remainder of the game. If the Gophers can find a way to score early, and get a 7-0 or 10-0 or whatever lead, you know, they maybe can follow the game script they want and force Northwestern into uncomfortable situations. But man, if it's a close ball game at halftime, and you know, maybe it's 10-7 or whatever, I respect Pat Fitzgerald too much, and he finds a way to get something out of those guys. And I know that Michigan was able to wear them down and eventually overwhelm them, but you know, they played them tough through the first half at 7-10, and this isn't his best team by any stretch of the imagination, but you just absolutely cannot overlook Northwestern. That's the point I'm really trying to make.
Absolutely. Now, before we end it, I do want to give this is a really good upcoming weekend for Big Ten football. This past weekend, not so much. This weekend, I think, is certainly probably the best weekend so far this season. So I'm gonna list the teams, and I want you guys to give me who you think wins. So first game, Michigan travels to East Lansing to take on number 8 Michigan State. It is number 6 Michigan at undefeated Michigan State. Luke, who wins?
I have to go with Michigan. I just think that right now they're playing this old school downhill football, and it, as explosive as Michigan State's been, I'm just going to give Michigan the edge just slightly.
Derek?
I'm going to take Michigan. I know people keep bringing up some bad second half of seasons that Harbaugh's had, but I don't think we're there yet. The end of the year, Ohio State might be a different story, but I think Michigan takes this one.
All right. Iowa, number 9, Iowa travels to Wisconsin. We talked about it. It's Wisconsin -3. For the record, I am going to take Wisconsin because I believe in Jim Leonard. Again, I think Bill Parker and Jim Leonard are two very good defensive coordinators, but seeing Jim Leonard being able to adjust from a triple option to the air raid and absolutely essentially shut that thing down. I mean, I think Jim Leonard at home against Iowa gets it done. Who do you guys think wins?
I think just because of how crazy 2021 has been, I'm going to pick Wisconsin, and they're going to find a way to get it done, and everything's going to be just an absolute mess in the West.
Boy, this is the one everybody will be watching. I'm going to probably contradict myself here. I'm going to take Iowa. I think Wisconsin has more problems this year than Iowa does, if that's the right way of explaining it. And I think Iowa scores on 2 defensive touchdowns.
Oof, that Graham Mertz. I can only imagine what would be going on there. I will say, I might flip flop because Iowa getting a bye week to prepare, and we've seen Brian Ferentz be able to draw some things up, especially with some extra time to prepare. But we'll see. I don't really care about the Rutgers Illinois game, so I'm not going to talk about it. But I think an interesting East matchup. It's essentially you need to win this game if you're going to become bowl eligible. Is Indiana at Maryland? Now, I believe Indiana play? Yes, they got boat raced by Ohio State. I don't know what the line is on this game, but what do you guys think? Indiana or Maryland?
I've got the line. It's 2.5 in favor of Maryland with an over under of 50.5. At this point, I just think that Maryland's lost too much. I think that they, you saw it with some of the penalties against Minnesota too. I'm gonna give Tom Allen a nod and get him a conference win this year. That's Indiana for those of you that don't know.
Boy, I have not seen hardly anything out of Indiana at all in terms of games. Just so this is a shot in the dark, but I would take, given Maryland's injury situation, I'll take Indiana.
Same thought process for me. 2 left, and then we'll get out of your hair. Purdue at Nebraska. I think it's Nebraska -6. I'm going to take the Huskers off the bye week.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Huskers too. I think that Frost just needs it too bad. And I think that, Brom was able to, work it out against Iowa, and he just got their number. But I think maybe that was more of a mirage than a trend.
Ryan, is this a night game? Just curious.
2:30.
It is a 2:30 kickoff in Lincoln.
I would take Nebraska. They're much better at home. If it was a night game, I would say Nebraska big. They've played really well at night, but I'll take Nebraska.
All right, final game, Ohio State at home. It's a night game in Columbus taking on number 20 Penn State. We obviously just saw Penn State not show up and lose to a Brett Bielema getting called out. Brett Bielema calling out his team, and then maybe that motivated them. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't know what the line is on this game, but I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I'm taking Ohio State big.
The line is -16.5 for Ohio State with an over under of 60. I'm with you. I think Ohio State runs the table. I do think I would love to see Ohio State versus Michigan basically to win the East. I know that they would both be undefeated. I'd like to see that happen because I think the build up to that game would be phenomenal.
Ohio State.
So Minnesota can take care of business, and we will see what happens in that other game in Madison this weekend. I think it'll be awfully interesting, but I think the last thing I want to say before getting out of here is I do believe Minnesota is a legitimate Big Ten West contender. Shocker, the guy who covers the Gophers puts on the maroon and gold colored glasses to an extent. But the reason I believe that and again, you two tell me if I'm wrong, is what they're doing up front right now is how you do it. That's how Iowa's done it forever. It's how Wisconsin's Big Ten West teams have done it forever, Northwestern to an extent. If Minnesota continues to play as physical as they've been on offense, and the same thing goes for the defensive line as well, I think they're going to present some problems in those two big games coming up now. Again, you got to be 1-0 in the Northwestern season. I get it. Mm-hmm. But the physicality and talent they have up front, I think, is superior to, I think, most of the opponents they have left on the schedule. I mean, do you think that's a terrible take? What do you think there?
Well, I'm glad you gave us one last chance, because I wanted to say something. We talked about Bowling Green earlier, so I didn't, but I think this is the right place to bring it up. I've heard a lot about the Bowling Green loss, particularly from either fans or media outside of this market. I think it's not a surprise that this is not a market or a football team that people are going to watch week to week really closely from a national perspective. So when people want to evaluate Minnesota, they take a quick glance at the schedule. They look at the scores and win losses. And I've seen a lot of fans and people shocked at this season that Minnesota's having. And what I wanted to say, I wanted to see if you guys agree with me. I'm not shocked at all. I mean, I think that Minnesota absolutely owns the Bowling Green loss. They earned that loss. It wasn't a fluke. It wasn't some, you know, I guess I'm going full homer here a little bit. But to complete my point, we've seen them in previous seasons look very lackluster early in the year, only to get on schedule and look really impressive. So I think to those of us who are a little closer to this program, I'm not surprised at all that they lost to Bowling Green. I guess a little bit of surprise, but not surprised that they played poorly. But I'm also not surprised that they're playing as well as they have. I think the sentiment outside of here is sort of, where did this Minnesota come from? What an odd season. And to me, I'm like, no, this is just kind of their pattern. So I think in summary, Ryan, I agree with you. I think that it is a, we've said at the beginning of the year, a two loss team. Now maybe even a three loss team could win the West. So I think the Gophers are right there. I think they're in contention.
Yeah. I'll close by saying, you know, Minnesota is often judged, you know, only as their season as a whole, right? And frequently we judge our head coaches by their less by their total record and more by their conference record. And the point I want to make is PJ is moving in on a milestone that I'm not sure everyone's aware of. He's currently 18-20 in Big Ten play. He would be the first coach, if he can win two games in a row, to get to 500. He'd be the first coach since Murray Warmath to have a greater than 500 Big Ten record. And that's no small feat. This can be a very hard market to win in. You have a number of pro sports, and this is a very, very, very tough conference to win in. And I think that if you can get a chance to win the Big Ten West title, I mean, that's going to be an impressive accomplishment. He's already tied for it once, and maybe having that opportunity in 3 years, kudos to him. So with that note, we'll wrap up today's episode. Want to thank everyone for listening. Want to thank our sponsors, the Goal Line Club, Ayers Rock Planning, and Burns Insurance. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.